You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, September the 5th, 2021. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, now Amazon Music. Pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Welcome to a September edition of the Talking Mets podcast, and I came to you middle of last week, and you know, it's funny, as I was in a way on that show, the last program we did, brokering somewhat of a peace between the players, the fans, and the media. Maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but you know, reaction was very strong about that show, and not many people, I don't think anybody in the entire, whether it be mainstream or independent media, took the stance that I did, where I basically said all three sides had accountability in some of the chaos that was going on within the Mets universe. Now, think about this. This is what's, you know, we talk about the thumbs down, the players against the fans, the booing. I get into it with the fans on Twitter. In the midst of all this, we really didn't talk about it. Noah Syndergaard, who's had everything go wrong for him, gets COVID, which might end the fact that if he gets a couple outings this year out of the bullpen, that'd be pretty unique that could happen, because just every time the guy gets started, he gets a setback. You know, you have the whole situation with the booing. We didn't even mention, and this is where they're still talking about it on Zoom today, the media, that Javi Baez loses a $200,000 earring running the bases. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That earring's out there in the field, and this might not be a popular opinion. One of the players of the Marlins stole that earring. No doubt in my mind. No doubt. Now, it'd take a lot of guts for one of those groundskeepers to steal it. But think about it. You're a young player. You just got called up. You get the piece of jewelry. That's a nice payday. That was stolen by somebody on the Marlins. Mark my words. That's not a popular opinion. And then, I mean, this is a serious thing. And this has been the most bizarre season. The GM gets arrested for a DUI, leaving Cohen's charity event. Of course, all the speculation is, you know, let's stir the pot with Cohen. And, you know, like as if he had to be a chaperone. You know, all the people that were at this event, he's got a chaperone, Zach Scott. In all seriousness, I hope Zach Scott gets help. You know, clearly that's a bad decision. What drives me crazy is that out of all the things that have happened off the field with the Mets when it came to their front office personnel, this, to me, the DUI is the most serious. Like, that is, you're putting people's lives, he's putting his life in danger, of course. You're putting other innocent lives in danger. And people, you know, well, you know, this happens. I mean, this is such an indictment on society. I got to tell you. I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, okay, nobody really seems to be all that bothered. And Scott is on administrative leave. He probably blew his shot at getting the GM job. All along, I had said Scott was a number two. He had to be thrust into the number one position after the Jared Porter situation. I think the front office has done really good work collaboratively with finding value acquisitions, especially during the replace the Mets situation. They are clearly going for it, the Mets. They go out. You know, Brad Hand gets designated for assignment. There they are scooping them up. Heath Embry is getting designated for assignment. They're scooping them up. The Mets are trying to win. They're trying to win as many games as possible. They're not here worried about the marginal extra dollars these kind of players bring in. And I told you, that story that came out about the Mets during the trade deadline, where they almost made that historic trade, is a good sign for the future. Now, the GMs, you know, you got to get him help, and that's part of the whole corporate rigmarole, that you can't just fire him. But I find it hard to believe that he'll be back. Whether he has a job with the Mets or not is a whole different thing. And, you know, it never ends. The Mets blow a 9-run lead this week and win a ball game. Rojas is back in the frying pan with the fans for resting Lindor and Baez. It's like a story a day. But the Mets are interesting. You got to give them that. And I've been saying pretty much for the last, you know, couple of weeks, they're playing out the string. And when you're under 500, you can't be considered in the race, no matter how close you are in terms of games. But, you know, four games out in the loss column to the Braves, four games out in the loss column to the Padres. They are doing what they need to do against the Nats and the Marlins thus far. They could have easily run the table, a couple of tough one-run losses to the Nats. I mean, the problem is the Mets have to be perfect. And when you look at their schedule going forward, they have really one road trip and a hard one in Boston and Milwaukee. But the rest of their games after this one game in Washington on Labor Day and then the Miami series are at Citi Field, where they've played really well. So they're going to make it interesting. All you can do as a fan is sit back and enjoy the Mets, enjoy this team. And what's so frustrating is just when you thought, and this has been the theme all season, just when you thought they were getting healthy, Brandon Nimmo goes out and pulls a hamstring. Almost the same exact scenario that happened right after the All-Star break. They were getting healthy. Lindor, oblique. Lindor's coming back. They got Baez in the lineup. McCann goes down with a back issue. Not as much of an integral piece offensively, but you get my point. They've never been able to have the momentum of their actual envisioned lineup. And, you know, thank God for the backup guys like Pilar and VR. I mean, those signings, and if there's one example of why the Mets are going to be different going forward, and I think that is the key thing to walk away from this season. I don't care how many games they win the rest of the year, whether they sneak into a wild card, whether they win this crazy division, or whether they fade into the sunset. They are a different team because they have the cash flow to compete at a high level. The margin of error is much greater when you could go out and get a Brad Hand and a Heath Embry, and when you could go out in the offseason and sign a Pilar and VR and sell them on coming to the team to be on the bench. And I think depending on how the new CBA goes, it might be harder with those guys because, you know, those kind of players might get actually bigger contracts with the potential of a new salary floor across the game. A different story for another day. But I think that there is, regardless of all the chaos, there are positives to be had. And for me, I'm looking at who's a keeper. And I'll tell you one thing, and I'm going to go back. I know everybody's mad again at Luis Rojas this weekend. He sat Baez and Lindor in the second game of the doubleheader after a grinded-out situation in Game 1. Maybe if they had kept that lead at 9-0 and had a blowout, he could have sat them the last couple of innings of that 7-inning game, and maybe he would have been able to play them, but you know what happened there. The Wild, you know, turned out to be a regular 9-inning affair. Luis Rojas is executing a team health philosophy. If you look at the way they manage the bullpen, they have steadfast rules about how doubleheaders are handled. They have steadfast rules about how many days in a row certain guys could go. And it's not just Lugo. You see Diaz, you see May. They are willing to try to use their B and C talent to win a game rather than push their A talent and burn them out and potentially not get the result they want, and then compromise them going forward. I may not agree with it. I hear the fans. Lindor and Baez, you know, young guys, pennant race, got to play them every day. Mets do have this crazy schedule again where they have a couple of games, obviously, with the doubleheader. I think it's 18 games in 16 days. They've had a lot of these stretches throughout the year. And maybe one of the reasons Lindor got hurt the first time is because during the replacement situation, he had to play every day. And it's hard to criticize Rojas' decision when the same afternoon, Nimmo goes on the DL with another soft tissue issue, hamstring. They're probably their best all-around offensive run creator. It's a killer injury. And all we could hope is that it's a 10-day injury. He says it's mild, and that maybe the Mets could get him back for the last 10 games of the regular season, because you're going to miss him throughout the next, you know, this road trip. You know, maybe he could come back, after the Cardinals series. Maybe get him a little bit on the next homestand. But that's where you go. 63 players on the roster. Mets are 4 games out. After being in first place for 90 days and not the place that you want to be in. But guess what? It's a hell of a job by Luis Rojas. I'm sorry. Anybody who doesn't think Luis Rojas hasn't done a good job. 63 players. A team that largely has had to play, they're 28 and 27 coming into today, I believe. Or, you know, they've played something like 61 run games. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of one run games. Manage the bullpen well. It's a team on bullpen and defense, which has failed them in this national series. And they've had to rely more on offense, an offense that looks more like the offense we expected back in April. But I have to tell you, I think Luis Rojas, he won't get any votes for manager of the year, but he deserves it. He has done an excellent job with this team, and whether the Mets go and get a president of baseball operations now, and he comes in and he purges the field staff and brings in his own people, I don't know. I hope Luis Rojas is the manager for a long time. Andy Martino of SNY has talked about that, and he came in under bad circumstances. He's been dealt nothing but adversity since he came in. Pandemic shortened season, ownership change, and now all the craziness of the injuries in the roster in 2021, I think he deserves a ton of credit. And he may be a bit boring talking about baseball in the process, but that's what a baseball guy, baseball manager does. He's not there to entertain you. Now, what I'm going to do today, Labor Day weekend, and I hope everybody's having a great Labor Day weekend, and I know that we have feeling the summer coming to an end, right? Today was the first day. If you're in New York, a little bit of rain, you felt that first twinge of fall. I'm doing my fantasy football draft, so football's right there in front of you. College football's already started. I decided to do a prospect segment because I thought it'd be fun, not knowing where this whole Mets thing is going. So earlier in the week, I had a chance to catch up with an old friend of the program, Keith Rad, play-by-play announcer for the Brooklyn Cyclones. Now, those of you who've been listening to the show for a couple of years know that Keith was on right after the Cyclones won the New York Penn League Championship back in 2019. Now he's had the privilege, and since then, he's had the privilege of watching live, in person, the top five Mets prospects, Matthew Allen, JT Ginn, Brett Beatty, Ronnie Mauricio gets overlooked, and of course, Francisco Alvarez, who is just matching the ball. Mets have a ton of talent that's come through Brooklyn in the last couple of seasons. It's not 3 seasons, it's 2 seasons, because there wasn't a season. And now, in 2020, there wasn't a season in 2020. High A affiliate now, great ballpark experience down in Coney Island. I haven't been there in a long time. Got to get a chance to get back to that. So Keith Rad will be joining me. Now, just keep in mind, I caught up with Keith earlier in the week on a day off when the Cyclones weren't playing. I believe it was Monday. So some of the stats we cite may be a few days off, as both Mauricio and Alvarez have been mashing since then. But great content, great conversation. You get a chance to learn a little bit about Alvarez and Beatty and the young pitchers. And I think, interestingly enough, Ronnie Mauricio, who gets overlooked because he plays a position which is, let's face it, with Francisco Lindor, locked down for the next decade. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When I return, you'll hear Keith Rad, play-by-play announcer for the Cyclones, and I chat about the prospects in Brooklyn. Prospects grow in Brooklyn. That's the theme of the show. Let's talk with Keith right after this.
3-2. Alvarez rips this one deep into left field. Way back and gone. A tank by Alvi in the bottom of the 6th inning. His 19th home run of the year. RBI number 64 to lead the Mets minor leagues. A big guy comes through again, and it's 6-1 Cyclones.
We're back, and I'm joined by Keith Ratt. He's the play-by-play broadcaster for the Brooklyn Cyclones. He also has his own pretty cool podcast, Amazing Starts, here at Amazing Starts. And Keith, welcome to the show. Now, 2 years ago, the Cyclones won a championship. I have you on. We talk Brett Beatty. We talk Matt Allen. Edgardo Alfonso, old Met, wins. And then, you know, all hell breaks loose. No minor league season. I mean, the Cyclones, the facility was still being used. And it's good to have you back 2 years later. And I'll tell you what, I was looking at the top 30 prospect list. You're the best guy to talk to. Five of the, that's top, depending on which list, the top five prospects you've seen in some capacity. So I don't want to hear anybody else say you've seen him up front in Brooklyn. Welcome back. Thanks for doing this. And crazy times, huh? But cool stuff going on in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see you, Mike. I'm a little scared to see what happens after this interview because, like you said, the world went down in a handbasket last year. But we definitely made up for it with the move up to now High A. We're certainly in more of a conversation as far as directly affecting the Mets with the future. And we've had, like you said, some bashers this year. We lost Matt Allen to TJ right before the season, but to have Beatty, Alvarez, and Mauricio at one time, I'm writing that lineup in my book every single night, you just kind of pinch yourself. So it's been amazing as far as the talent is concerned. The future, maybe it won't be now or next year as far as these guys are concerned, but maybe at the end of next year, you'll start to see some of these names like an Alvarez, Beatty, Mauricio pop up playing for the Mets. But been a great year so far. The results haven't been great, but individual right. play has been terrific.
And that's interesting because it's High A now. It's a full season, not short season. Before we get into some of those names you brought up, what are some of the differences for you guys? I mean, anything different? I mean, obviously, it's still the Cyclones. It's still Brooklyn. It's still Coney Island. I know the world is reopening up. How have the crowds been? How has the atmosphere been? You know, has it been vintage Brooklyn now that, you know, to a most part throughout the season, I think people are trying to, you know, get back to some sort of normal?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it was off to a slow start. We were at 20% capacity, and then we had to check vaccine cards, check masks. So it was a little bit difficult. You know, people were just – they had so many questions. I think a lot of that hesitancy of not wanting to worry about that. It was a little slow to come out. And even though we've opened up now full 100%, it's still been a little bit slow because on our end, we, in the beginning, weren't allowed to be on the field. We couldn't be on the dugout. And to create that fan experience like we know and love, like you go to Brooklyn – we didn't have that in the beginning. And as far as our giveaways are concerned, we didn't know we were going to have a season until about 3 weeks before we got the schedule, which was about 4 weeks before the season. So we've kind of put together our best foot forward as we hope. But, you know, I travel with the team. The crowds are okay. Everybody's happy to be back. But everywhere we go, you know, fans are coming out, but it's still not the same numbers that you see all across the minor leagues. But when you come to Coney Island, right now we're still doing Firework Fridays, which are put on by Coney Island at 9 o'clock. So we may play, at 10 o'clock. So we may start at 7 o'clock and get into the eighth inning. And all of a sudden you start seeing a fireworks show going off as the game is going on. That is probably the most vintage Brooklyn and vintage Coney Island thing you could probably see. And I love the opposing pitchers who like step off the mound, or the opposing batters, if they're up, step out of the box. It's like, no, keep going. We're playing this game while the fireworks are going on. So that's still cool. A lot of fun.
That makes it feel a lot normal. And I have to ask you, this Feltman's hot dog, I know Nathan's, is there something to it? Am I throwing some, I keep hearing about these Feltman hot dogs of Coney Island. Do you know anything about this?
I can't say that I do.
I was going to ask you, I haven't died. I said, I hear about these hot dogs, Feltman's of Coney Island. And I thought maybe the Cyclones had something about, that's more of a Barstool thing, I think. So,
yeah, I guess so. And I don't think I'd be allowed to say that. It's Nathan Say We Die kind of
that's
thing.
That's not
yeah.
even a sponsor. So there you go. the big name everybody's going to ask about, Francisco Alvarez. Look, the guy, you know, is having a tremendous year. It seems like there's a new highlight of a new home run. And what's impressive is that, you know, it's been a while since I've been in Brooklyn, but that's not a hitter's ballpark. That's a tough ballpark to get the ball out. You got a couple of guys, Mauricio, and when Beatty was there, making that very small, that ballpark, wind coming in from the ocean. Talk about Alvarez. I mean, everybody's excited about him, and you got a chance to see him up close.
Yeah, I mean, we have this deepest center field in New York City. So we're 412 to dead center. That's deeper than Yankee Stadium and Citi. And the wind blowing in off right field makes it impossible for Beatty, who's a lefty, and Ronnie, who's a switch hitter, has a lot of power from that left side, made it impossible. But we've noticed, you asked about the biggest thing between short season and high A, is that these guys are, they're hitters now. They can actually have that grown strength. And Alvarez has strength unlike I've ever seen. Now, I've been at different levels, not just short season. I've been at, you know, full season A, double A. I've seen some guys with power. Alvarez, for a 19-year-old kid, has some of the craziest natural power ever. Every single person in the building during BP, whether it's our team, whether it's the road team out there stretching, coaches, everybody stops during BP to watch this kid hit, not just because he's hitting balls 500 feet, but because of how hard he hits the ball. And he's hitting balls 109, 110 off the bat at 19 now. And he's still so far away from the big leagues. Lord knows what it'll look like when he gets
that would up. Be top five. I think that'd be top five if he was a big leaguer. That's like Pete Alonso, Vlad Guerrero Jr. type velocity.
I don't like to exaggerate, but it's pretty dumb crazy the type of attention this kid gets when he's just taking swings at 5 o'clock in the afternoon every single day. We had our biggest wow moment of the year, like you said, how deep our ballpark is. With our batter's eye is, again, 412 feet away, and he hit it to the right of the batter's eye, like dead center. I've never seen that before. I mean, we've had rehabbers, you know, Robbie Cano, Todd Frazier recently with us, and they'll even in BP, these guys have a tough time hitting it out. And Alvarez hit one just to the right of the batter's eye. So far, a shot I'll never forget. But he's 19, and he's doing what he's doing. He is now the number 10 prospect in all of minor league baseball as of 2 weeks ago. So he's getting the attention now. He's certainly getting the attention now.
Absolutely. And being that he's a catcher, one of the things we've seen this year, and the Mets have struggled with this for a long time, is that how important receiving is. Say what you want about the offensive production of a James McCann or even a Thomas Nito, but the work they've done with the staff, throwing runners out, managing the running game, you know, there's a lot of things going on with the big league club that are not great right now, but pitching and calling a game in defense has not been one of those. How's Alvarez? And I know he's very young, and from what I hear, he may need some work in that part of the game. A bat will always supersede everything, but let's remember, when you go behind the plate, you're expected to do more. How does he stack up on that side of the ball?
Yeah, so I actually get my answer to this question a lot from pitchers, because they are usually actually a great gauge of the type of catcher that they like to work with. And they say that his receiving certainly needs a little bit of seasoning. And if that's the only part of his game that needs seasoning, he just needs reps back there. I mean, Yogi Berra was a horrendous catcher and then turned into a good one like the next offseason. So it's not a huge ask for Alvarez to get better at. He's throwing runners out now. That we had a weird rule at high A to start. Pitchers had to completely disengage from the rubber before throwing over to first base. So you had an extra step. Catchers were, every catcher was having a tough time throwing guys out at second. Halfway through the season, that rule changed and went back to normal. And Alvarez's percentage has gone up by, I think, 10 or 12% since that point. So he's certainly throwing guys out. Just the receiving, I'm not going to say he's not great at it, because that's not fair to say, but he's 19 years old at it. I'll say it like that, with a lot of room to grow. But this kid, whether it's the biggest thing I see with him is he is such a sponge. First of all, he's a tiger, he's a bulldog, and the most aggressive, you know, competitor I've ever seen. But he is a sponge when it comes to learning the language. He wants to learn everything. He wants to work hard. All those cliches he literally fulfills. So I don't see him, if he has a weakness, he knows about it. He is trying to fix it. Our catching coordinator, Bob Nadel, who's with us a lot, he is constantly working with Alvy on everything. So receiving is probably the part of his game that he needs some work in, but 19 years old at receiving. You'll take that.
Baseball Reference has him at 24% caught stealing. That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
With the
rule at the beginning of the year,
right?
Which sounds like the league was like, this ain't working. This is a carnival. You know, I'm all for action, but let's get real here. We don't want people. This is now Little League where people are going to get an automatic double every time they get on
base. Exactly. He's at about, when that rule changed, he jumped out to, in the short time after it was over, it was about 30 some odd percent, which is really, really good.
Yeah. And I think that's important. He's 19 years old. And, you know, you see this.
because of the level that you're at. You know, I always go back to when Wilmer Flores was 16 years old and we were talking about him back when prospects were, you know, just starting to get national attention. And by the time he got called up and was somewhat of a disappointment, it seemed like he was with the organization forever. And then, you know, 2015, he's in the World Series and he was still a young player. And I think that's right now. And I think Mets prospects, because of the market, you see with Jared Kelnick, how, you know, he got all that exposure because of a trade. Pete Crow Armstrong's probably going to get that exposure. Is Alvarez now, with being on the top 10 prospect list, is he recognizing the media crunch? Because it's going to get more and more. He's going to probably be the number one prospect going into next year. And the expectations are, well, he's going to be here. He's going to be here. Just because David Wright and Jose Reyes are 20 years old in the big leagues, that doesn't mean everybody will be. How's that component? Because I think that's a big part of prospects now, especially top 10. There's celebrities where 15 years ago, forget about in the 90s when I was a kid, nobody knew who the prospects were unless they smacked you in the face, like Greg Jeffries or something like that.
Yeah, that part of the game with a lot of players is usually always mental. I mean, we're talking about the difficulty now with Mets fans and booing and players, and can they take it, things like that. That's kind of the topic of the week, soup du jour. But with Alvarez, his mental game, he has such an edge to him that it's the edge where somebody's on a mission kind of thing. I've met a lot of players, and the ones who are kind of, you can tell that they're talking to you, but they've got other plan. They've got things going on that, you know, that they're ready for. They're not just kind of your run of the mill, nice person to talk to. He's got an edge to him that he feeds on that kind of stuff. But also, when he doesn't like failure either. Another thing, Mike, his temper is low, but he's frustrated after he makes an out. He snapped a bat in half over his knee a strikeout, which,
wow,
right. Like Bo Jackson was doing that Jack at, you know, how old was he? 30. And Albie did that one night. Now I use that as kind of his competitive fire that he doesn't like to fail, but he's got such an edge to him that I don't think that the allure of trying to fill big shoes is really going to get to him. I think he loves it. He feeds off of it.
I know the next guy is in Binghamton, and we talked about him a couple of years ago. And I remember you talking about those big bear claw hands with Brett Beatty. I remember that comment. I did a little PSA promo of that quote. I was like, that's a great quote, you know? And, you know, he started off slow in Binghamton. He's picking it up a little bit. I feel out of the top five guys, I feel Beatty is the guy. And you know, I don't know if Vientos was in Brooklyn when you were there, but Vientos plays the same position. It'll be interesting how they play that. Mets might have a need at third base. Obviously, free agency and money is a big part of their repertoire now. But it'll be interesting if Beatty's close, or a guy I could see maybe next year making a push. Do you agree with that? Because they have a couple of guys that potentially could be in the mix for the big league club. And out of the guys we're talking about, I think Beatty would be the closest one there. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. I'd still like to start him next year, probably at Double A again, but he can always make that quick leap. I mean, we saw Tyler McGill this year make the leap from Double all the way up. He is, you know, fans are always walking into our stadium looking at Alvarez, Beatty, and Mauricio and wondering, you know, who's amazing now. Beatty, Ronnie may have the biggest ceiling. Francisco may have the biggest ceiling, but Brett is really good, really seasoned now. So he gives you that look like this kid is polished enough to get up there now. So he's always somebody that can hold his own. And I'm very eager to see him do that. He's also another player that has that kind of edge. That is, I mean, he was draft night. He's in Secaucus, you know, under the bright lights on TV. He's feasting on that, loving that, loving the spotlight. So with that challenge, I know he's much better at third base than he was at the beginning of the year. And he's has one of the best, you know, plate awareness and plate discipline set of skills out there. And right now, of the hitters we've seen, even with Alvarez, Beatty's one of the best natural hitters to all fields, slightly old school, still has a lot of power, and yet to harness it right now. But he's probably the closest of the three. And of course, you're talking about the top five. I know Vientos this year has come out of nowhere to hit 22 home runs at this speech. And I think that Brett Beatty talk kind of got to Vientos a little bit, like, I'm going to pick it up and show you what I got, which was awesome. I think the Mets love that. By the way, that
nothing wrong with competition at the minor league level. Even if it doesn't mean they play for you, they'll get you somebody. That's for sure.
Right. I love watching Beatty, and there's guys that we've played in the league. Other teams that come up to me and go, that guy is just a big leaguer. He's a big leaguer. Just the way he fouled, just the simple art of fouling off a pitch. You don't care about, but you're trying to stay in the at bat. Just 10% swing on the outside corner, just foul it off. I'll get my pitch. He just does things differently in a very professional way.
And I haven't watched him, but watching the numbers, remembering talking to you, I saw a guy in 2019 struck out a ton, looked like, you know, okay, he's going to hit buck 90, you know, but he's improved so much. And we don't know what went on in the alternate site last year. That's like that secret. A couple of videos made it out. I don't know if you had a chance. Did you have a chance to peek through the fence? You know, I'm curious, without giving away the secret sauce, I mean, there had to be some good developmental competition that at least for Beatty, he soaked up in there, because, I mean, this was a tough situation for the ball club. You know, I think a lot of prospects are just getting themselves back on the radar because of not really having a real season in 2020.
This year, what I've noticed from him is that we talked about his bear claw hands as a 19-year-old 2 years ago. He is an adult now. Like, his physical nature, he was kind of like a big, chunky kid. And I remember Edgardo Alfonso telling me, oh, he's kind of got to be careful, because he could kind of, Fonzie was being colorful, but saying, he could blow up. You got to be careful with a guy like that. He might just be a little bit of a heavier guy. And seeing him at the end of the alternate site, and this year, he is sleek, slender, looks different.
I didn't recognize him. I got to tell you, when I saw the video, I'm like, that's Beatty? Because it's a good point. He looks like, I hate to say that because it's a narrative, he looks like a big leaguer. And people say, well, what do you mean? Just watch him. That's why I said, could he be in the mix next year? I think that's unfair. You got to add, you know, developmental time, but it's amazing. Here's the guy that I think gets forgotten, and I think the fan base at the very least is ready to all too quickly throw away because of Francisco Lindor, is Ronnie Mauricio. And I'm looking at, and we're, by the time of us having this conversation, he's actually got more home runs than Alvarez, and he's got a sweet swing. I've seen some of his swings on video. Plays a position that's locked up for 10 years, whether we like it or not. So before we jettison Mauricio out of here for, you know, the next deadline deal, A, talk about Ronnie Mauricio, and B, you know, can he play another position? Dare I say, is he going to be in 2 years, 3 years, good enough where Lindor is going to have to learn how to play second base and be a $35 million a year second baseman? So as of this recording, I think the fans will be ready to put Mauricio in over Lindor. I'd be careful there, but we'll talk about Mauricio a little bit, because he gets forgotten amazingly enough in an organization where, you know, maybe they don't have the best prospects up and down today, but certainly have a very heavy top five.
Yeah, I think he gets forgotten because he was number one until Alvarez came out of absolutely nowhere 2 years ago and jumped into that conversation. And Ronnie is, and I talked to the coaches about this, they think he has the highest ceiling of any prospect. Him at his best, at all of those great talents that he can harness, can be better than anybody else that the Mets have. And I think that's fair to say. It's also big shoes to fill. We're seeing his power completely explode this year. He had played in the minors maybe three years before this, 7 home runs. This year at this recording, 17 home runs. He's working on his game little by little. It's funny, the Mets this year, they at least at the minor league level, they throw Beatty out in left field in one game, and everyone's going, and then they put Vientos out in the outfield in one game at AA, and you're going, what are they up to? But they never moved Ronnie. And I think that's a vote of confidence that they want to have in him, because Ronnie is the type of player that needs that swagger, that love of the game in order to play well. And he is someone that you want to be confident, because when he's at most confident, he's kind of like a Lindor with just how loose he is, or a Cano. He's Robbie Cano at the plate as far as just his looseness. I mean, his lefty batting stance is identical to Robbie, in my opinion. But he's just that loose player. So he needs that confidence. I don't know what their plan is for him. I don't think they need it right now, because he's still he'll probably use a nice year at AA to continue to work the strike zone. His on-base percentage has been under 300. The whole year. That is certainly a part of his game that needs work. But again, at his best, if he could harness everything, he could be a not just a big leaguer, but a big, big, big leaguer, if you catch my drift.
Absolutely. And Keith Rad, play-by-play announcer for the Cyclones. I mean, what a interesting time. In about 5 years, I think, Keith, I'm going to call you up and say, look at those guys out on the Citi Field Diamond, that you were watching them. Now, I don't know if there'll be an opening in the booth, but you could keep plugging away, man. And just remember, we had, when you're a big star, try to make some time for this show, because, you know, we had you on when you're in low A, but pitching is the name of the game. And you mentioned Tyler McGill. I don't know how much you saw him in the prior years, but regardless of, you know, where he winds up, he's going to be a solid big league pitcher somewhere in a rotation. And when Matthew Allen went out with Tommy John surgery, there was a little bit of a hit on the pitching side. You saw that this year with the Mets in their depth, but you have JT Ginn and some other, you know, Jose Buto, who I've heard some good things about, maybe be more in the mix. Talk a little bit about the pitching you've seen come through and, you know, the ceiling of some, and maybe are there guys that next year the Mets could be more inclined to not have to go out and plug necessarily these starts with journeymen and maybe start to say, hey, I got a guy that maybe he's not a star, but similar to McGill could come in and contribute.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing in this organization that from the minor league perspective, it's certainly lacking is pitching depth. As far as Matt Allen goes, I mean, he was one of the, you know, what a terrible loss at the beginning of the year. I mean, he gets TJ. Okay, this year's a wash. He'll be back next year. But he was so ready for this year to he said dominate. So it's a shame to lose him. You know, JT, we've seen a little bit of. He's coming off Tommy John. I mean, he had Tommy John, I believe, at the same time that Syndergaard did. And Syndergaard's kind of not even back yet. So what we're getting from JT Ginn right now, I don't know if we're looking at 100% Ginn, but he's pretty solid. He still has a long way to go. Josh Walker is a name that he was our opening day starter at High A. He has flown through the system up to Triple A. I love Josh. He's one of the best guys I've ever met. But it's certainly a point of emphasis that you saw in this year's draft. I know that the Kumar Rocker thing didn't work out, but after Kumar, they went pitching college, pitching heavy, which means they want guys who are ready, more ready than a high school pick that they're just kind of, you know, taking the chance on. So it's, I wish there were more people out there in the system that could be the next guy. I know Buteau has been very impressive at Double A. Hopefully he can continue to harness that. Adam Oller has been terrific, now up to Triple A. So it's still not a, we're not talking about a name like an Alvarez, a Beatty, a Mauricio, right. That number of depth. Not many clubs have that number of depth anyway. But, yeah, pitching still has to come around for this organization.
And you got a chance to see Syndergaard a little bit throw there. So he's going to be fastball changeup. It sounds like the velocity's there and, you know, short setback with COVID. Hopefully he'll be okay. So it's, you know, you're still getting to see some of the big leaguers come through. That must be still fun for you guys to see them on rehab and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of our best. Those were our best days when we had a big star come down to play with us. But now that we're High A, we're kind of getting those best days all the time because, you know, these guys are so much closer to the big leagues than they were when we were short season. But yeah, as far as rehabbers are concerned this year, I mean, when Thor was in the building, it's my favorite when a pitcher's in the building. We had Cookie Carrasco hang out with us too. But when they're out at our park, if you've never been to our park before, for the fans listening, you go down the right field line, there's a ramp that takes you to the backyard, and you can, on that ramp, just look down over the bullpen. And so all these kids and fans are just hanging over the railing, looking down and watching a big leaguer 10, 12, 20 feet away. That's always one of my favorite things to see when those guys come into town. So.
Before I let you go, you know, I mentioned pitchers, hitters, whatever. Are there names we're not talking about? Because obviously there's, you know, media prospects. And then there's guys that if you're a minor league guy like you or a scout or a real junkie that's into this stuff, for lack of a better word, you're like, that's not that like, no one's talking about this guy. There's always guys like that. Maybe McGill is a good one. I mean, Tyler McGill, I wouldn't know him if I fell on him in spring training. That's only a couple of months ago. And we do this silly show. And in the winter, we talk about, you know, signing this guy and this veteran. Tyler McGill's name never came up. And then one day you look up, he's striking out, you know, 15 batters per nine, you're like, whoa, that's got to be, you know, minor league. And then it's like, okay, he's here, and now he's somewhat established. Give me some names that you see. Maybe they're not big league ready, but are there names we're missing that maybe if the fans want to, you know, go online or go to the ballpark, maybe take a look at before the season's over?
Yeah, I remember Ty Lohr was with us in 18 out of Arizona, and he was just a big quiet kid, and he never really said much, but happy for him now. He's certainly come on the scene. As far as pitching depth, maybe our guy that we've had this year, Bryce Montes de Oca, who is he's LeBron James with a hat on and a glove, 6'8", 265. Wow. He throws 102 miles an hour. He threw 102 multiple times the other night. He was drafted in 2018 out of Missouri, hurt in 18, hurt in 19, hurt in 20, made his pro debut this year, throwing 102. He's just grabbed a slider. He was having some trouble with walks, but it's his first year in forever. 102, Mike. I'm not like every wow. night. It's unbelievable.
Even if that's a hot gun, you're still looking at 99-100, even if it's a hot gun.
Yeah. So he's probably a name that I would say look out for. He could definitely crack the top 30. People are going to look at his walk rate and say, what's going on? But it's his first year back. I'd imagine there's some things to work on. And Eric Orsi has been a really nice surprise. He started with us. He was drafted last year out of New Orleans. He's another great kid. I know when he was drafted, the story of him surviving testicular cancer and getting through that was kind of a great story that he told. He's one of those kids. You want to talk about Alvarez, just has an edge to him as far as wanting the next thing. He's up to AAA now. He started with us at High A, throwing about 94, 95.
Maybe a bullpen arm for next year. Maybe a
exactly. bullpen arm for next year. Exactly. Yep. So he's another guy. And then this Carlos Rincon dude that they got from the Dodgers for Billy McKinney, that was a great move. I mean, this guy's mashing at AA with, he's up there right with Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos. So, and Jake Mangum's having a great year. There's a lot of guys that have played themselves into the conversation. So there's always those McGill-esque players.
Yeah. You got a good coaching staff. I'd be remiss before we wrap up here. Ed Blankmeyer, had a chance to interview him many years ago when he was with St. John's, well-respected local coach. Mariano Duncan, guys, you know, Reds, Yankees. I know Yankee, but interesting career. Royce Ring, who had a brief cup of coffee, but was traded for Robbie Alomar. You've got an interesting coaching staff. I know that Fonzie, and there was a lot of emotion there, and he did a great job. Talk about the coaching staff. You know, there's some good, interesting new faces in the organization there.
Yeah, Ed Blankmeyer is a terrific manager. We love having him. He's the type of guy who's just incredibly organized, but also incredibly fun and loose, and comes to the ballpark every day. We always joke that it's his favorite place on planet Earth. If he could, if he's not playing golf, he's standing in some third base coaching box somewhere in the country. He just loves this.
Right.
Loves it so much. I really enjoy him because I'm even going to guess his age. I think he's, you know, young 60s, and he's still out there like he's 40. He's extremely knowledgeable about the game. He's extremely well connected. He was at St. John's for 24 years. So just loves the game. Mariano Duncan is the same way. He's usually walking onto the field with a speaker over one shoulder and a bat over the other going out there. He is a ball of energy as well. He's always keeping it loose for guys. Like, I remember taking grounders during BP, Brett Beatty, Ronnie Mauricio, always making sure that they did everything the right way. And Royce Ring, one of my favorites. We've had him in 2018. He's back in 2021. Doing a great job with the staff that we have this year. And then Nick Jackson, who's kind of new to the organization as a hitting coach. The Mets have gone extremely analytical when it comes to this year. They've hired a ton of people. I think Steve Cohen, we have a vice president, Steve Cohen, but Uncle Steve,
yes,
Cohen, the
Uncle
the
Steve, that's numero right. uno.
He said he wants to have the best analytics team in baseball. And so we're seeing that trickle down. And Nick used to be a scout with the Cubs, and now he's now a hitting coach in his first year with the Mets. Trying to implement some of those things that the analytics staff wants to do with the hitters. So great staff, love having them. It's been a tough year. I mean, I think we're, you know, 20 games under 500 in fifth place of five teams in our division, but they're working every day, and a great group.
Well, you're not going to make a championship call this year, but we still love you. We'll have you back. Are we going to see you back in Brooklyn next year? I mean, I grew up in Bensonhurst, so Brooklyn's near and dear to my heart. I might be on Long Island now. We're going to see you back in Brooklyn next year, and we'll be doing this again next year. Hopefully, you know, the world won't go upside down, and, you know, I'm telling you, in a couple of years, I'm going to be thinking of you when I'm at a Met game in Citi Field seeing some of these kids. So are we going to see you back in Brooklyn? You do Wagner too, right? Wagner basketball? Wagner basketball. So you got a lot of things coming up on the hopper. Let the listeners know a little bit about what you got coming up.
Are we going to see me? Are we going to see you, Bensonhurst? We haven't seen you come out. You
I have to get back out to the ballpark. You're right. I don't know. I got so many people on Twitter angry at me. I got to stay away from the ballpark. I got to put like a little hat on.
I know. Another day that ends in Y, social media. I love it. I love it. I love it so much. I've worked in many great places, but this is by far one of my favorites. To be owned by the team that we work for, there's such a family connection that I'm certainly not going anywhere for a very long time. But yeah, I'm getting married in the off season finally. Rats. After COVID pushed the wedding back. So we'll do that. We'll do the honeymoon thing and then back at spring training and excited for 2022, but loving it.
Don't think about Francisco Alvarez on the beach. All right. Tell your significant other. We got it for you. All right. You've been generous with your time. I'll let you get going. Thanks so much, Keith. Let's do this again, man. And anytime you need something from us, please give us a call. All right.
Thanks, Mike. Right. Appreciate it.
Keith Rad, play-by-play announcer for the Brooklyn Cyclones at Keith Rad, R-A-A-D on Twitter. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.
The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at mikesilva@talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, talkingmetspodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Great segment by Keith Rad. Always enjoy talking to him. And think about how unique it will be for Keith. Assuming that, and you got to think that there is a strong possibility those top 5 guys, all of them will reach the major leagues. It's a high probability, I think. And I know that's hard to say with prospects, but I think there's a very good probability that those 5 guys reach the big leagues. And at some point, if they are with the Mets, which is very well likely they won't all be, he could look back and he look out at Citi Field and see these guys that were in Brooklyn just a couple of years ago. And I really think the one positive that came out of the realignment of the minor leagues for the Mets, now that they bought Syracuse, is that you have this New York State-centric system. You have Brooklyn. You have Binghamton. You have Syracuse. Obviously, you have the big league club. Granted, you have down in Florida with St. Lucie. That's now low A and spring training. But that's what spring training is for. You get away from the New York Northeast atmosphere to get away, to get yourself prepared, go on rehab assignments, really get your feet wet before you get into the cauldron of New York and New York media and the whole New York experience. I just think it's great for the brand. And for many years after the Norfolk Tides parted ways with the Mets, they bounced from New Orleans to Buffalo, Las Vegas. And nothing against those cities because I had interactions with beat writers in those cities. I mean, think about it. There's no more beat writers for minor league teams. I mean, it's really play-by-play guys and guys that work for the organization that you got to reach out to. These newspapers, these publications in these towns, they're not hiring anybody to cover the minor leagues. I mean, every level of the Mets organization at one point, maybe not the low A, but even the Cyclones would have someone from the Brooklyn Eagle or something covering them. And I'm not really sure that happens anymore with the state of what's going on in media and whatnot. But I think the Mets are really set up from a minor league perspective to have this really cool brand going up and down. And hopefully this show, as we continue to grow and be a part in our small, humble way of the Mets universe, will be able to bring you to those places and bring you those names and those voices and get you a feel of who these players are more than just the clip that you see on Twitter or the stats on MILB.com or maybe some prospect writer, which all due respect, just because you're a prospect writer doesn't mean you know anything more than a scout or me or you. I mean, I talk to plenty of people and they laugh at some of the things they read in some of these publications. And these are people that work for Major League Ball Clubs. So anyway, I digress. Great segment, and I'm really excited to hear more about Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty
and Ronnie Mauricio. And it'll be interesting to see how this all transpires as we go into 2022, now that we've had a full minor league season. Losing that minor league season was a big blow to the Mets because it stunted the development of certain prospects. It gave you a feeling of, you know, what is this organization's depth? You knew they had strong top fives who were, you know, a few years away, but now everybody talks about tier two prospects and needing more depth and volume in trades. And, you know, you didn't know what the Mets have. So we'll see. He mentioned some names of guys who have made their way up that were in Brooklyn, Eric Orsi, Jose Buto. Maybe these are names that'll help the bullpen or the rotation as soon as next year. And you know, after watching the 2021 Mets, I don't think 63 players is in the offering for every season going forward. But baseball teams, especially with the, you know, the extra guy during doubleheaders and options and the shuffling up and down, and the fact that you could maybe do some shuffling with the Mets now that their farm teams are within the state of New York and they don't have to go 2,500, 3,000 miles away to get here. I think you're going to see more fantasy baseball type roster transactions going forward. That's what the game has evolved into, where they try to squeeze every ounce of juice out of every asset in the organization, even if it means three appearances, two appearances, coming up for a doubleheader, what have you. That's the way the game is played now. What's next? Well, first, enjoy Labor Day. Obviously, hope you guys are having a great weekend, enjoying yourselves, watching some baseball. And obviously, this is the not the true end of summer, but the historic or symbolic end of summer. We're heading into the fall. It is now meaningful games in September, which the Mets are part of. That means, you know, fall-type activities. That means football. Like I said, I had my fantasy football draft over the last couple of days. And I'm sure some of you guys are doing that as well and whatnot. And then we have the 20-year next weekend anniversary of 9/11. And I know the Mets are going to be doing something. I know that Mike Piazza should be back in town, remembering that historic home run, obviously honoring those who lost their lives on 9/11, and the small part that baseball played in healing this city and the country. Small part, important in the sense of, you know, maybe our little universe, but I know that there was, you know, bigger things going on in the world at that point. But it was nice that baseball could play a small, small part in moving people forward. So we're going to try to do something. Not sure how I'm going to do it. I'm piecing together a couple of different ideas, but we'll do something here on this program. And it'll be tactful, it'll be fun, and hopefully it'll be entertaining. And the real wild card here is, can the Mets just slow down with the crazy stuff? Because the emergency podcast, and you try to do these, you know, these shows is something great, you know, to do your little piece in remembering a great baseball moment with the Piazza 9/11 home run. And who the heck knows what's going to happen? Is someone going to lose a diamond earring? Is somebody going to get into a fight with the fans? Is there going to be an off the field controversy? I think that the Mets have had their fill, and I'm sure with Sandy Alderson now just taking the reins completely, he's going to say, "Hey, I'm going to let this thing stay stable until the last day of the regular season or the last day of the postseason, when, regardless of how far the Mets go." But anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in. Want to thank Keith Rad for joining us today. Great work, Keith, play-by-play announcer for the Brooklyn Cyclones. You could check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. We are now on Amazon Music. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Labor Day. We'll be back with another show next week. Till then, take care, everybody.
to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.